God's word that we're going to consider for our sermon today is from John chapter 6. I'm just going to read the last verse of that again. I am the bread of life, Jesus told them. The one who comes to me will never be hungry, and the one who believes in me will never be thirsty. You know, this is the second most famous time that Jesus talks about bread. The most famous time is one that you know well. We say it every week. Jesus taught his disciples to say, give us this day our daily bread. One thing people will point out about that part of the Lord's Prayer, give us this day our daily bread, is that it is the only part of the Lord's Prayer where Jesus tells us to ask for something that is a physical need, the only part in the Lord's Prayer. They'll also say this, some people will, that in the idea of daily bread is included every physical need that we could possibly have. And I think there's truth in that. But I don't think that's what Jesus was thinking of when he first said the prayer. I think he was literally thinking about bread. See, in that time and place where Jesus lived, having bread every day was basically the bare essential of what it took to live until tomorrow. If you had bread in your stomach, you knew that you were going to wake up in the morning. And so Jesus is teaching his disciples to ask for that, the very least thing possible from God, just to wake up tomorrow. That's what he taught his disciples to pray for. Today in our story, we have people who are coming to Jesus and asking him to give them their daily bread. They're asking the right person the right question. But Jesus has a different question that he wants them to think about and wants us to think about. If bread is the basic thing that we need for life, if bread is the essential thing that lets us live, what kind of bread are we looking for? To give you a little bit of background to this story, maybe you know that when we have readings in church, a lot of times we get a story that plays out over a couple different weeks. Last week, if you were here in church, you know that we read the story of the feeding of the 5,000. And this is really the fallout from that. It's a sermon that Jesus starts to preach after the feeding of the 5,000. It was a big bread moment. I'm not going to reread the whole story, but I do want to recap a little bit of it for you. Remember that Jesus is teaching in the area of the Sea of Galilee. This is kind of like the homeland for his ministry. This is where he does a lot of his work. Everybody knows him there. And so when he's up there, everybody comes out to bring their sick to him so he can heal them, to hear his words, to see his miracles, and a huge crowd starts to gather. 5,000 men plus women and children. This is a pretty remote place, and there starts to be a problem that develops. It's getting late in the day, and people need to get food. Now, Jesus' time was not like our time, where if you have a lot of people who need to buy food, they can go to grocery stores and things like that. Now, at this time, 5,000 men plus women and children, that's the population of entire towns and cities. There are not grocery stores where they can go to buy food. If they're going to go look for food, they're going to have to be hunting from village to village to find anywhere where there's something to eat. This is a real problem. So Jesus decides to test one of his disciples. He says, where are we going to get enough food for them to eat? And the disciple says, sir, 8 months' wages wouldn't be enough to feed everybody. And another disciple says, well, we have this boy who has a lunch, 5 loaves and 2 fish. I guess we could start to hand that out, but how far is that going to go among so many? And then you know what happens. Jesus has everybody sit down. He gives thanks to God, and then he and his disciples start to break the bread and distribute the fish, and it's enough. Everybody eats and has their fill, and in place of the one basket they started with, they pick up 12 baskets of leftovers. But the really important thing, the thing I want to focus on today, is what the crowd does after that. You see, Jesus didn't have a lot of showmanship. There's not a flash or bang when he does this miracle. It's very quiet. But everybody picks up on what's going on. They understand that this is a miracle. And they say, surely this is the prophet who was to come into the world. And then they get so excited that they want to drag Jesus off and make him their king by force. A lot of times when people tell that detail of the story, they make it sound like this is a crazy mob that has just had something really exciting happen to them and they're not thinking straight. But what they say proves that that's not the case. Surely this is the prophet who was to come into the world. They think Jesus is the prophet. That figure comes up in the New Testament a couple times, the prophet. It's a reference to something from the Old Testament, something from the time of Moses. Do you know how important Moses was to the Jewish people? Moses was one of the big three in their history, Abraham, Moses, and David. Their entire story of their nation revolved around those three men. And even among those three, Moses was extremely special. He was the man who made them into a nation. He literally took them to the promised land, brought them through the Red Sea, gave them their Bible, taught them how to worship God. Moses was a big deal, so much so that God says this about Moses. He says, with other prophets, I appear to them in a vision or a dream, but with Moses, I talk to him face to face. I don't speak to him in riddles. He sees the form of God. Moses was the prophet. But at the end of his life, Moses said something really important. He said, after me, the Lord will raise up for you a prophet like me from among your own brothers. You must listen to him. And ever after, the Jews were looking for the prophet. And now, they think they found him. Because Jesus just did something very much like what Moses did. You remember in our Old Testament reading, Moses was giving the people miraculous bread from heaven. He was feeding thousands for free for 40 years. Now Jesus just fed thousands with miraculous bread. And they started to say, this is the second Moses. This is a man straight out of Old Testament poetry. This is the person who's going to change our world. And they're ready to get together and become his revolutionary guard and start his kingdom. Jesus, of course, wants no part of that. He's the man who said, my kingdom is not of this world. And so he kind of escapes. He crosses the Sea of Galilee, goes to the other side with his disciples. And the next day, everybody comes after him. And when they find him again, they've still got Moses on the mind. You can tell by the question they ask him, what must we do to do the deeds that God requires? You see, first Moses had given them a law. They called it the law of Moses. It was all the things God wanted them to do. Now they think maybe second Moses has a law too. What's the law of Jesus? Jesus says, it's no law. Believe. And they say, okay, we're happy to believe in you. You give us manna. If you do what Moses did and feed us for our whole lives so we don't have to work for food. And once again, Jesus redirects them. He says, I'm not going to give you free food, but I am going to give you something better. I'm going to give you something you need even more. I'm going to give you myself. I'm going to give you salvation. I maybe don't need to tell you, they were pretty disappointed with that answer. It's always a little disappointing when you get a spiritual gift, I think, when you're looking for a physical gift. And they took it like a slap in the face. They were so disappointed and offended and confused by what Jesus said that many of them, at this point, literally turned their back and walked away from a man they knew was capable of feeding thousands of people. They walked away from him. They wanted a transactional relationship with the Messiah. They wanted a Messiah who would just give them all of the bread that they wanted. And you know what? If Jesus had done that, these thousands of people would have still followed him. I'm going to go even farther. All it would take for everybody in the world to believe in Jesus is if he just gave out free food to everybody. You'd have to be crazy not to take that up. So why doesn't he do it? Because it's not the bread we need. It's not the thing that would nourish what we need in us. It might even nourish something bad in us. That's the case with the crowd in front of Jesus. They didn't really want him for the right reasons. They didn't really believe in him. For all their talk about Moses, he wasn't the Messiah they wanted. They wanted a Messiah who would give them bread. Jesus isn't interested in being that kind of Messiah for them. What kind of bread are we looking for? I don't have to tell you that God isn't giving us free food for life. The way that God has chosen to give us our daily bread is through hard work, spending half our waking lives at our jobs, usually jobs we're not all that thrilled to be at, just to put the bare necessities on the table. It's hard work to have earthly bread. But that's exactly the thing that Jesus tells us not to work for. That confusing? God puts us in a situation where we have to work for bread and then tells us not to work for it. Maybe the way to understand it is like this. You have to work to get your bread, but you should not work for your bread. Or to say it a different way, the things that we need in life are just a means to an end. Even the most basic needs, a shelter over our home, the food to get to tomorrow, the money to pay our bills, even those things are just a means to an end. Even surviving till tomorrow is just a means to an end. They're not what our life is about. What our life is about, what Jesus does want us to work for, is spiritual bread. Jesus wants us to put in front of all of our daily needs, himself and his salvation. To seek first his kingdom and righteousness and trust that everything else will be given. He's asking us to put our first fruits of energy and effort into something that won't have a payout. Certainly not the kind of payout that'll put a car in your garage. Jesus is calling us not to have a transactional relationship with God. Our faith is not here to make us happy in this life. It's not here to give us blessings. It's not here as an insurance policy, so we'll be okay in the next world while we do whatever we want in this world. Faith starts and ends with this truth. Jesus is all we need, and everything else is just a detail. Faith seeks the bread of life and not earthly bread. Because all earthly bread spoils. I work a summer job right now taking care of properties for some very rich couples up in Wisconsin who have quite a lot of land, but they've gotten a little bit older and they're no longer able to take care of it. It's incredible the lives they live. I can't imagine living in a huge house and not having to worry about money, living on these massive properties. But in the way that they talk about things and the topics that come up about inheritance and legacy, even selling out, in how hard it is for some of them even to move around these properties that they've owned, there's another truth in there. Pretty soon, all of that bread that they have worked for is going to spoil. It's all going to be taken away from them. And you realize that even the most well-to-do among us, even their struggle for daily bread is just a battle against the inevitable. One day we all lose it. Jesus is offering us a way to win that battle. He's offering us bread that actually sustains, bread that actually gives you life, that doesn't spoil and that doesn't go away. That's what he says in the next verses after our section. Jesus says, "Here is the bread from heaven that anyone may eat from and not die." He means that literally. The answer to death is to be found in Jesus. That's why Jesus is able to go and see a dead daughter and say she is not dead, but asleep. Death has no power over those who eat the bread of life. Jesus is not telling us to stop working, to put food on the table. He's telling us to put things in their right place. Do you want to live? Then work for the food that actually gives you life. Truth be told, we're not very good at understanding the value of earthly bread and heavenly bread. We like our earthly bread quite a lot. And heavenly bread can be a little disappointing sometimes. Jesus is all we need, but we spend so much time so discontent, so much time feeling sorry for ourselves, for all the physical bread we don't have. And when we come to church, it is so hard for us to feel excited about the feast that God is giving us. Our hearts are cold and apathetic to the food that gives us life. We need to hear the bread of life. Even though we come to church, and when we come here, maybe it's nice, but the fact is, out there, life is hard. Out there are real concerns we have, and sometimes the spiritual promises God gives us don't feel like they actually answer the things that we need and that we're looking for. And Jesus' answer to that is stop striving for those things. It's more than just a rebuke. It's a promise that God knows how to give you your daily bread. That God knows what you need and will give it to you, so much so that you can leave those things with Jesus. You can cast your cares on the one who cares for you and live for the spiritual bread. That's not going to look like a transaction. It's not going to look like a world where if you're faithful enough to God, then He takes care of what you need. It's going to look like faith. Faith is opening your hands and receiving the blessings that God gives. It's closing your hands and clinging to the rock that saves. That's what working and striving the spiritual bread is. It is clinging to our Savior. Strive for that spiritual bread.